Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Welcome to Horror Bites on Saferoon, the show where we highlight short indie horror games and the people who make them. I'm playing Spelunky and he's on a sailing trip. I'm Neil Bolt and he's Jay Krieger. How goes it, Jay?
Pretty good, man. I got my sea legs about me this week, my Lovecraftian void sea legs. Yeah. So I am happy to be here chatting about Horror Bites as always.
This week, we gobble up two more horror gaming morsels as Jay brings us Hovercraft Horror. And I put us in tight spaces with something that wants to kill us. Nothing has changed there, as ever. These games can be found on itch.io, and if you play and enjoy them, please help the developers out by supporting their present and future works in any way you can. As ever, links for both games will be included in the show notes. So first this week then, Jay, let's go a-sailing.
Yeah, so my pick for the week was Fractal Sailor, which is an atmospheric horror tech demo from developer Matte Vanko. Apologies if I butchered your name there. So for Fractal Sailor, the player is navigating a hovercraft through an endless fractal void in an attempt to refuel and reactivate an abundance of stations that are levitating in this sort of the void space that they're exploring while actively trying to avoid monstrous denizens that are patrolling the area. So this game, first and foremost, as I said, is a tech demo. So going into this, I was really just sort of anticipating this really visually sort of stimulating experience, just even based off of the screenshots of, okay, you're going to be piloting through this void, essentially. And as you move towards these fractal, very, you know, kind of Cronenbergian almost looking walls and whatnot that kind of are ever pulsating and they look very almost flesh-like. But when you steer too close to them, they break away, much like, you know, rotating fractals do. And then you can kind of like see a new path. And so basically, the only objective of the game is to navigate these environments, and then you're looking for those stations that I mentioned, which you can find their locations through like the scanner that your ship has. And that is the brunt of the experience, right?
Yeah.
It's that you're doing that and you're kind of just sailing around in this space. But, you know, I think that the presentation of this and the sort of graphics of it really are, you know, quite impressive for the state that they're in, considering it's a tech demo. You know, it's always sort of mesmerizing to navigate this world and seeing the environment fractal out of your way, but then seeing these new paths appear and whatnot, while at the same time you're aiming for some avenues that have already been created that kind of like give you a little clear-cut structure, but at the same time they don't sort of limit the player's ability to navigate any way they see fit. You know, while the objectives themselves are pretty simplistic, I will say that, you know, there's some good tension here in terms of, you know, you're going to be approaching some of these stations and those are quite frequently where the monsters that are patrolling the area are. And so at that point, you know, you kind of have to set up your game plan of, okay, I'm going to turn off my light that helps me to see because that draws their attention and whatnot. And then sometimes what happens is you kind of will wait to see what their patrol path is. You'll turn your light off and you'll kind of sit there stationary. It actually very randomly really reminded me of The Matrix when, you know, you have the
Nebuchadnezzar,
I forget what they're called, but yeah, the Nebuchadnezzar. And then whenever they have the sort of alien robots and whatnot come towards them, then they have to like shut down their ship and just wait for them to pass while they've got, you know, their hand on the EMP device. And, you know, this game kind of captures that energy in a way, but you don't really have any defensive options outside of just kind of sitting and waiting, which is pretty intense, I'll say. Now, in terms of the like sound design, I thought it was okay in terms of just like creating this space that for the most part is like somewhat liminal, but at the same time, like you feel like you're in this other world, even when, you know, not much is happening around you. And yeah, I guess the last thing for me that would be a standout would kind of just be the lighting of it. There's this sort of almost Argento-esque neon red lights that are, you know, most of the time kind of bouncing off of these fractal environments and whatnot. But again, this is a tech demo. So it's mostly just to kind of display this tech that, you know, is very graphically sort of pleasing, I suppose. But at the same time, like, it's not the deepest of experiences that people will play. At the same time, much like with any other type of demo we cover on Horror Bites, I think that the foundation here is pretty strong. It would just be including a bit more variety in what the player is doing, perhaps a bit more capabilities of the hover ship at their disposal, and maybe tightening up the controls just a little bit. Because the sort of hovercraft itself has sort of a loose, floaty sense of controlling. Like, you're not going to be turning on a dime or anything. But I think that if this was an experience that was extended and then, of course, had more a variety of, you know, the things that players are going to be doing, you would become more accustomed to that. I played for about 20, 25 minutes. And at the tail end of the experience, I felt like I had a better handle on things. But if I had to encounter, you know, more than one monster, it would have been a lot more of a challenge, I think, just because of how precise you have to be and sort of how you have to lead almost the controls themselves to be like, okay, I know there's going to be this much of a delay when I try to turn or when I try to, you know, write my course and whatnot. So yeah, that was Fractal Sailor for me. How did you find this one?
Yeah, I'm very much in agreement. You know, this is, being a tech demo first, you know, it is very light in certain areas and a bit swimmy in a way that kind of works for it. You know, in the way you were talking there about how the ship controls, you know, it's very survival horror. You know, the whole idea of just like feeling like you're fighting against the controls in a way that isn't just because they're badly designed. It's just that they are, you know, it's something alien thing to be controlling, you know, in this environment, this thing you are on, don't really conform to what you'd expect. So yeah, you can kind of forgive that. And I think looking at it as that, you have to look at it less than like a game jam thing where, you know, the idea is basically there and then working around that is very much the case of like, how can we push this technology and show it off really well? And you know, job done, I think, in that regard, they've done very well. You could very easily pick it apart as a game, but I think that's not the point here. This is very much about vibes, you know, and atmosphere first. And in all those departments, yeah, it's doing a fine job. You know, I think that's important to note that it would feel kind of redundant to criticize it too much for anything mechanically it's doing wrong, because I don't really feel like that's the point so much. But yeah, one of those benefits of it is that it does feel like an intense experience because of how loose and swimmy everything is about it. So yeah, I quite enjoyed that aspect of it.
Yeah, I almost think about it kind of like a driving game. Yeah. Where it's like, it's, you know, the first inclination is you're going to jam on the gas and you're going to, you know, take those sharp cuts and whatnot. And then you inevitably end up flipping your car. And it's after a couple of races, you start to get into your groove and sort of your mojo and whatnot. And you become a little bit more keen on the track. And that was the same thing here, which I think speaks to the swimmy, floaty nature of those controls. It's not so much that it's not designed well or, you know, handles well, but it's just getting the sort of parameters of your hovercraft and then realizing like the turn trajectory that you need and timing things perfectly, which, you know, that was a great shout in terms of saying it's similar to survival horror and that, you know, some people's inclination is, oh, I'm just going to unload on the first enemy I see. And then, you know, you get to the boss and all you have is your knife, basically. Yeah. And so it's the thing where it's like, you got to find the rhythm of the game. You need to sort of learn the ins and outs. And then on that second playthrough, you really kind of have a mastery on the handling of things.
Yeah. And yeah, another game obviously came to mind, which was Dredge, you know, in terms of like, you know, everything smooth sailing until it isn't, sort of the way. And you can just one wrong knock and you can change your entire game very easily. I mean, obviously this again in a very loose sense, but yeah, I like that. And you know, the Matrix shout is really good as well, because yeah, you know, that was something that straight away came to my mind when on those bits, because yeah, it's I think the look of it as well just has something about it that feels like it could be part of that world as well. So yeah, a good pick here, I'd say. So we are just off to charge our wind-up flashlights, but we will be back after this break. Welcome back to Horror Bites. Our second selection this week is Soul Rift's Crawl. Crawl is a short horror game where you squeeze through tight cave spaces to document missing people with your trusty camera. But this task, of course, is nowhere near as mean as it should be, because a hand-operated flashlight and a camera that needs to have its cartridge replaced after every picture are all you have on you. Oh, yeah, there's a monster down there, and you can only ever move forward. So, you know, good luck to us, I think, in this situation. Now, this I can't think of the game it was we had before, but there was a game we had where it was about just like crawling forward and through a cave, and it was like bit by bit. This is a bit more simplistic in terms of like movement. It's very, but I did like straight away the idea that, you know, you can only ever move forward and knowing something's there, to be not so much chased, but to have it come at you. The camera in this situation, you know, can keep it at bay, but you've got limited film. It's like a Polaroid style thing, and yeah, literally after every picture you have to manually reload, have to manually look down to wind up your flashlight, find these spots. You've got a map, to be fair, that you can look at to find where you've got to be photographing. And in all fairness, by the time you get to the end, you know, there's an inevitability to what's going to happen at this point. But, you know, I really quite like the idea here, because, you know, anything that channels the descent in being these tight spaces, really getting that, or if you want to say something like the forest, which obviously has a lot of, you know, underground cave stuff, but just the amount of times that creature just suddenly pops around the corner and, you know, you basically have to shoot it, so to speak, you know, with the camera to make it go away. It was very Fatal Frame-esque, you know, without it being like to banish a ghost. It's always only temporary. It has such intensity in that, you know, the way you do just always know you're going to see it again soon, and what the pictures can often show you that you don't see in the moment, sort of thing like that. They're very clever what they do with this creature and kind of keeping it hidden, you know, a hand here, a thing there. And yeah, it really does feel like something you want to get done with and be out of, you know, from the start. You know, it's, you know what's coming, you know you can't avoid it. And yeah, you just want to get through it. You just want to push through, get through, and you can't, but you can't rush. You can't be too over the top with it. You have to keep making these things. It's giving you that sort of tactile control that, you know, made Amnesia the Bunker so interesting, in terms of like things are always happening and you've got to do all these things on a very granular level. And that really makes the intensity stand out. It's the basic thing we've had for many years of like the Dark Souls thing of like, oh yeah, you're in a menu, but the game's still going, sort of thing like that. But you know, this is very much like there is no safe space in this game at all. It's pretty much just one long run to the end of this thing. And it's just, yeah, very, very unsettling in that regard. So yeah, it's pretty well made, you know, for what is about 10 to 20 minutes, I think. And yeah, does a really good job.
Yeah, no, I want to start with that tactile nature of this game, because I think that really is the feature that complements, you know, the overall construction of this game. You know, it's in terms of like the level design, right? It's just, it's a series of caves, but having that sort of, I suppose, almost disclaimer where it's like, you can't move backwards, it's always forwards. At first, I was kind of taken aback by that, because I was like, well, there's this intricate cave system, I don't want to miss anything, mm-hmm. right? Because, you know, typically spend 30 minutes with these games and I'd like to see as much of them as I can. But then once you start to actually like scan that map, and you have to use that map in, you know, frequently because of the fact that the objective markers don't pop up unless you're in the proximity to them, which is a really smart mechanic to, you know, forcing the player to kind of be vulnerable for a minute, right? The fact that, okay, you can't look forwards, you can't look back, you're going to have this map in your face, and then you are, you know, left with your ears as your sort of means of defense, so that way, you know, if you hear something, then you can snap that camera and ward off that monster for a little bit with that flash, which I think is a really smart sort of device. But at the same time, you have that map that is really built with that notion in mind that, like, okay, you can't move backwards, so you have these little nooks and crannies that can be used to then, of course, turn around eventually. But at the same time, like that almost in and of itself can feel like you're exposing yourself to more danger because of the fact that you might go towards a corner of the map that has this little loop-de-loop that lets you head back in the opposite direction. But at the same time, like there might not be an objective there. So all of a sudden you're opening yourself up to a future attack or an ambush point or something along those lines. You know, as somebody that obviously loves Amnesia and, you know, has been a Frictional Games fan since the Penumbra days, the tactility of this game, I mean, that is, I'm such a sucker for that feature. The fact that, you know, you have to roll over and then quite literally look at your body to see like on your chest, on your vest or whatever, where you have your light, you have your map, and then you have your camera. That features like that, I just love because again, it gives you a better sense of space. It reinforces just how claustrophobic this environment is and the whole, you know, setting itself. But I think that the fact that, you know, you have that moment where you're like, okay, maybe this is just a gimmick. But then the first time that you have to look around at your body to grab something and then you see the monster there. I mean, that might be one of my favorite Horror Bites moments of all time because I was not expecting, again, for the threat to come from behind me because of the notion of you can't move backwards. So like the first time I saw the face move into frame, I was one of those holy shit moments. And then, you know, of course you snap the flash and it goes away. But at the same time, like that reinforces, oh, you only have five, I think, photos to take, which, you know, might be horrific planning on the part of the person that's embarking on this, this journey to go, you know, document the missing people and whatnot. But at the same time, like it taps into that survival horror aspect of like, yeah, man, I got five bullets. I got five photos. I can either use them to document or I can use them to save my hide. So I continue my trek into this ungodly cave with this ungodly creature. And then little touches like the fatigue system, which it lets you, you know, crawl faster. That can, of course, make you vulnerable. So there's that sort of give and take of like, okay, I want to flee faster. But at the same time, that might make me susceptible to future attacks down the line. But yeah, you know, I think I'm also, you know, obviously a sucker for anything that resembles The Descent, just like you. But this was the first game that I think genuinely captures the claustrophobia of The Descent. And at the same time, the helplessness of which, you know, you might have that camera, but that's only going to scare it off for like a couple of seconds or something like that. So you never are allowed to feel safe, which I can't remember the other game that we covered that was similar to this. I have a feeling like it was called something along the lines of Crawl. But, you know, with that game, there were too many wide open sections where you could then, you know, jump up and start scaling cliffs and these things, which is not a knock on it, but just this is more of what I want, which is that claustrophobic feeling of I can't escape. You know, my back's against the wall. If I turn around, who knows if I can even crawl back the way that I came. And in this case, you can't. So it does a really good job of utilizing the space, but then having that monster that's ever pursuing you. And whatnot. And I don't know, I'm a sucker for games that make me feel helpless because you know, that's half the joy of horror games, right?
Yeah, and I think that, again, only works in a game like this because it's short and that you can take that to its natural conclusion. I think there are games that have that sort of thing, or have done in the past, that they go on too long with it and then it kind of loses some of that spiel and vigor. But yeah, I think that's a really nice way of doing it. And you know, I think with these two games this week, it's the first one of those weeks where I look at both and go, these together would make a cool game too, you know, sort of thing. Yeah, like the idea of the fractal stuff and like going forward and you know, just doing everything very granular would be kind of cool, you know. So someone can go do that. You'd be basically making Scanner Sombra but in tighter spaces, but that'll do me just fine. So but that is it for this week. We are wrapping things up. If you are a developer of an indie horror game, demo, concept or game jam entry, we would love to hear from you. Drop us a DM at SaferRoomPod on Twitter or SaferRoomPod@gmail.com for email if you'd like to be highlighted or interviewed on the show. Jay, it's been well one of those again, hasn't it? And we'll be back next week to make sure you are climbing out of this hole with us with more Horror Bites.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.
Every town has its dark history. Hometown Ghost Stories is a paranormal podcast that goes town to town all across the globe, exploring the world's most haunted places, tapping into the dusty archives and the darkest corners to bring you the most terrifying stories of real people and their harrowing experiences. Hometown Ghost Stories dives into the history of haunted locations and investigates why and how these places earned their terrifying reputation. Rob, Dave, and Jesse go live every Tuesday night after an uninterrupted documentary-style breakdown on the case, followed by an open discussion with live viewers. Subscribe today to listen to Hometown Ghost Stories on your preferred podcast platform, or watch the video version on YouTube and now Spotify. Head on over to the Bloody FM podcast network and check out Hometown Ghost Stories, if you're brave enough.